ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Things are feeling shaky.
Australian business leaders say they're worried about global uncertainty, inflation and...
You're not sure what's going to happen at work.
This is a very hard day for many of our teams right across Telstra.
New technology is going to mean big changes. Eek!
Previously, that was prepared over 2 weeks every quarter by three or four staff members. That now gets run overnight, and so then they're able to start reviewing it.
All these events can make us feel uncomfortable or even scared about what might happen. Hello, I'm Lisa Leong, and for This Working Life, I'm tackling uncertainty head on. Because no matter how much you try to hold it off, change is a-coming. The good news is, help is at hand.
My special skill when it comes to dealing with change and uncertainty is being able to understand that there is a way forward. So understanding what's going on in your brain that makes you feel uncomfortable, how that's helping you or hurting you, and helping you find a way forward. My name is Samantha Rush, and I'm a decision-making expert.
Samantha's most memorable experience of dealing with uncertainty at work was finding a way to get her boss out of a crisis.
So I was based in London and my boss used to travel a lot as we had theme parks and attractions based all around the world. And my boss called me one morning from New York and he said to me, a plane's just flown into the World Trade Center. I said to him, I'm sorry, what? I thought it was a joke because he was a joking kind of guy. He's like, no, seriously, a plane has just flown into the World Trade Center and it's absolutely chaos. Get me out of here. In the end, after a lot of phone calls in the company that I work for, I was able to use my contacts and use the resources that I had in that space to work out a way for him to get out, which included about 12 trains, 7 planes, but we got him home within 2 days.
And what did you learn from that experience about uncertainty and change?
Reflecting back on it now with what I know about the psychology, I suppose, of uncertainty and change is that the first thing you need to do is take a breath. Actually gather together your thoughts so that you're thinking properly, and then there's always going to be a way forward. It might be a teeny tiny step forward. It might be a step to the side and then forward. It might be a teeny tiny step backwards, then to the side, then forward, but there'll always be a way forward.
One of the scariest kinds of workplace change is a restructure. And you might have heard whispers about it beforehand, but then confirmation that it's happening hits your inbox.
So probably what you're going to be thinking first in that moment is, I'm going to lose my job, or am I going to lose my job? What am I going to end up doing? Am I going to be able to still keep living and look after my family and put food on the table and do all of those things? That's normally the first place that we go. We know that as humans, we always go to a bad place first. So there's some research that's shown neutral feedback or neutral information that doesn't give us clarity. We always go to a bad place first, a negative perception. We're not going to go to a, hey, this is fantastic. There's going to be some really great opportunities internally or externally, and I'm going to find a really great job. That's not the place that we go. We go to the bad place.
And then what happens next with that scenario?
I think it depends on you and how you think. So for some people, they might go into that kind of, oh my God, and just that analysis paralysis of what's going to happen and getting really nervous. For other people, they'll go into gossip and backstabbing mode and try and make themselves look bigger or feel bigger than everyone else just so that they feel comfortable. And for other people, they're going to, take a proactive approach and they're going to start looking for opportunities. They're going to start meeting people who are going to be the hiring managers and really advocating for themselves. So it really depends on the person. It depends how you perceive that event. Is it a threat or an opportunity? And that will drive how you move forward.
Another scenario is that we could love our boss and then suddenly our boss gets a promotion and we've got a new boss. What about that type of scenario?
So I think that there's either a response where you think to yourself, I like the old boss, I don't like the new boss. So going almost like that loyalty response. And therefore, the way that you start is you start thinking with a negative viewpoint already. I'm not going to like this person. This person's going to be different. The other way is to think with a bit more of an open mind and be curious about them. Try to understand them. How do they work? How is that different? So again, it's that closed mind versus open mind perspective.
Let's go to some global uncertainty. What about AI, which seems to be creating disruption to the way we do our jobs? How does that feed into uncertainty, Samantha?
So I think, again, there's that panic response of I'm going to lose my job, my occupation's not going to be here anymore, or, you know, those around me might be in the same situation. So the first thing is just to try and corral your brain to stop it getting out of control. I think another one is to think about it from that curiosity perspective again. So what could this do? What are things that I could use AI for to benefit me? What might be some really positive things that can come out? Because we all go to Terminator first, right? We all go, this is what's going to happen and AI is going to take over and kill us. But it doesn't have to be that way. So just trying to control our thinking and to try and think from a slightly bigger picture, like what could happen?
And what about conflicting information within an organisation? Say you're talking to one manager and you're hearing certain things, and then of course you talk to your team members and they're saying something else.
So when you're hearing those differing pieces of opinion, ask for more information. So when they say X, oh, okay, well, you know, how did you find out about X? And what do you think that, what might that mean? And what do you think might happen from here? And what if the opposite were true? So asking questions rather than accepting things at face value, I think could be really helpful. So rather than immediately shutting down and going, oh my God, this is true, but I've got these conflicting things and I'm really confused and I don't know, trying to stay open-minded enough to ask questions, to understand. Because as humans, we seek to understand. We don't like where there is uncertainty. We like certainty. We like to know the answers. And when we don't know it, sometimes we shut down.
And sometimes we fill in the gaps, which can be dangerous.
Exactly, exactly. And that gap we'll fill it with something negative.
Telstra recently announced a large number of job cuts. Might something like that set off a domino effect of uncertainty within the whole organisation, especially when it's not exactly clear who is going to lose their jobs?
Yeah, absolutely. And I've seen similar events in organisations that I've worked in the past where there's a massive restructure. You know kind of what's happening, but you don't know exactly what's going to happen and what's going to happen to who. And those different responses is where we see those things happening. So someone will go into blame mode. Well, this is happening because that team didn't do that. Then there could also be they're moving into the gossip space of, well, I know what's happening and this is what's going to happen. And then the other side that could happen is that people looking for those opportunities. So saying, okay, well, I think this is going to happen. Let me go talk to some people, see what I can find, try and make some meaning from my own perspective, but from broad perspectives on what's happening and why, and then see how I might be able to use this to my advantage.
Also find that when a big change is coming to an organisation, the organisation stops looking outside and actually becomes quite internal. So the closed door scenario where everyone's talking in small groups about themselves or what might be happening for hours and hours endlessly. What do you see the ramifications of that for organisations?
So massive short-termism. So that's one thing that I see when that happens. And another one is that you're leaving out a big chunk of understanding. So there's a whole piece around competitive intelligence and strategic intelligence. And where you close off your brain to what's happening from the outside, you're missing all of that information that actually might help you with the solution to whatever it is that you're trying to work on. So I think staying insular, which is it's instinct, right? So that's what we do when we have that flight, fight or freeze response is we run towards our instinct, and our instinct is to protect and to kind of, you know, to close ranks and not let anyone's focus kind of stray further than it has to be. But to be able to make informed responses and to be able to make the best decisions, you need to have all of that information.
And you talk about intelligence. Is the danger in this scenario a knee-jerk reaction? So going to tactics rather than strategy at this point?
Exactly. Exactly. And that's what instinct is. So animals react based on instinct. And humans, we're animals too. We do the same thing. We react based on instinct. So that's that fight, flight or freeze response. That's what we do as individuals, as organisations, as teams, is that where we feel uncomfortable and we don't know what the answer is, we jump straight to instinct, which is that knee-jerk reaction.
Now, of course, we're focusing here on the workplace, but there's cost of living pressures, high interest rate. It might be leading us to have worries outside of work as well. So how could that flow into our workplace?
it becomes a Jenga effect, I think. So we've got, let's just say in the instance of there's a restructure that's announced, I'm already feeling a little bit uncomfortable about that because I don't know what's going to happen. And then there's all of these personal life pressures that come on top of that. So that I'm already feeling a little bit uncomfortable because I don't know if I'm going to have a job and to be able to look after my family, but I'm actually struggling right now. So that means that there's an extra layer of stress, which means that my brain is going to be going into overdrive. My stress response is going to be going through the roof. And what we know about how the brain works under stress is we don't think the same. We don't process information the same. The prefrontal cortex that does most of our proper thinking work, it looks at options, it looks at consequences, it thinks about risks, and it comes to a decision. But what happens when we're under stress is that that job doesn't happen there. It goes straight to our limbic system in the back of our brain, and that's that stress response, the fight, flight, or freeze. And that's what's going to get us into trouble and to stop us being able to move forward.
So it doesn't sound like blaming ourselves for this reaction is going to help here.
Absolutely not. It's totally normal. For anyone who never feels uncomfortable about not knowing an answer, never, that's not human.
So what can you do in these moments where things seem hard? Well, you could start by strengthening something called your ambiguity tolerance. Decision-making expert Samantha Rush knows all about it.
So ambiguity tolerance is all about how comfortable you feel with different kinds of ambiguity. There's comfort with difficult problems. There's social ambiguity. So something like, you know, going to a party where you don't know anyone, or going to a networking function and having to talk to people. There's shades of grey, there's unfamiliarity, there's complex problems, there's taking risks. And the other element of ambiguity tolerance as well is if you're in a leadership role, how your comfort with ambiguity impacts your team.
Is it baked in or can it change?
It absolutely can change. So what we, again, know from the research is that there are 8 different skills that you can practice that will help to improve your tolerance of ambiguity. So what those skills are going to do is they're going to slow down your stress response, and they're going to help you to keep your thinking in that prefrontal cortex in your brain, and they're going to help you think in certain ways that are going to help you to be able to take that teeny step to the side or teeny step forward to help you keep making progress as opposed to being locked in place.
And we'll drill down into those skills later. I want to unpack, though, the word ambiguity. So what's the difference between ambiguity and uncertainty in this context?
Excellent question. So what we mean by ambiguity is where something can be understood in more than one way. There's more than one possible interpretation. There's no obvious meaning. And also where something isn't clear. Uncertainty is where you don't know what the answer is going to be. So uncertainty could be part of ambiguity. And there's also an element of predictability that sits within uncertainty. So for some things that are uncertain, you're never going to be able to go and find out more information to be able to get the answer. You're just going to have to wait.
And you're saying that this concept of ambiguity is subjective.
It is subjective based on a person's own experiences and their own psychology. For people that have gone through things together, so we know where there's been some kind of disaster where people have been together, or there's been some kind of tragedy or a group event, so where there's been a group of people who have gone through the same experience, which I suppose in a sense is something that there will be some groups of people who have been through that with COVID. So I think through the pandemic, we all have a slightly better understanding of what's it like to be in that kind of environment. But there are groups of people that will have that shared experience. But otherwise, it's a very subjective thing.
And is there a section of the population that have higher tolerance to ambiguity?
So what we know from the research, again, is that there's about 10% of the population that have a high tolerance for ambiguity. And the rest of us, 90%, we don't feel very comfortable when it comes to ambiguity and uncertainty. And again, exactly what that means, exactly who those 10% of people are, I don't think there's a way to identify them and put them in a box and say, these are the people who have this job, who have been through this, who do this, that have that higher ambiguity tolerance. I don't think there's a way to try and put them in a box.
So let's learn some of the skills that can help us cope with uncertainty. We know mindfulness is one of them, but what kinds of practices might be possible for you to use when you're at work?
Going for a walk. That helps your brain keep working rather than being stuck in the back. count backwards from 20, so that helps your brain kind of realign itself. And also using breathing techniques like box breathing will really just slow down that stress response so you can stay thinking clearly. So that's a really important one. Another one is assertion. So someone not feeling comfortable to say to their leader, I don't feel comfortable about what's happening here and I need a little bit more information. So that's part of what assertion means. So that's being able to take control of a situation, to influence others, to stand up for yourself and also to stand up for other people. One thing that you can do quite easily to practice assertion and actually being able to try and take those steps forward as opposed to being stuck in place is to identify a mantra for yourself. That's going to help you to be able to almost like push yourself over the edge. And
have you
act.
Got an example of a mantra?
You got this.
You got this. And you say it to yourself?
Yeah. And you can just say it in your head. No one even knows. Come on, you got this. You got this. We can do this. And then you walk over to your leader and say, hey, I'd really like some more information about what's happening here. Can I talk to you about the questions that I have? It's important that this is not about aggression. It's not about going, hey, you're not telling me everything I need to know. It's about being able to be calm, but actually to be able to stand up for yourself and or your teammates.
How do you keep yourself from staying on the side of assertion versus the side of aggression then?
I think it's about mindfulness, making sure that you're in a calm state for you to be able to think properly using your prefrontal cortex. So if you do, if you can do that, have your stress response low, you're going to be able to think clearly about the consequences of if I go to my leader like this or if I go to my leader like that, what's going to happen? And is that going to be the best outcome?
Samantha, there's a lot of focus on the idea of setting boundaries. So how does being assertive in this instance relate to this idea of setting boundaries?
I think that's a big part of it because what you're doing when you're setting a boundary is you're standing up for yourself and you're saying, this is the line. I don't feel comfortable with things coming over this line. And so when I have my mantra, maybe something related to my boundaries, that's going past my boundary, then you're going to be able to stand up for yourself. And if that boundary is you're protecting someone else's boundaries, it's the same thing. So it's not about aggressively saying to someone, you're coming into my space, you're making me feel uncomfortable, get out. It's about calmly explaining, this is my boundary, I have this boundary because of this, and I'd really prefer that you didn't do that.
Now, it's common to feel stuck, in fact, when you are feeling stressed or experience a kind of inertia. What are some ways you can move through that?
Lots. A couple of easy ones is, number one, develop little rewards for yourself. So most of us, thinking back, we have little rewards for ourselves. I'm going to go and do this and then I'm going to have this, little chocolate bar, or I'm going to do this before I go shopping today. So you've got some kind of little reward for yourself. So that can help you moving forward, especially if it's something that you don't really want to do. So for example, what we've been talking about and going to see your leader. So you say, I'm going to have this conversation with my boss and then I'm going to go and get myself a cup of coffee. So actually you've got a little reward that's going to happen at the end of that. And the other thing that you can do is to reframe your thinking to something positive. Creativity is another one that I use a lot with teams. So trying to find what are other ways that we can do this? What might be some options? I did a course a few years ago, creativity online with Stanford, and we had to come up with a problem. We had to find 100 solutions. And by the time you get past about 35, you're clutching at straws. You're all over the place. It gets really hard, but that's when the magic starts because you're really thinking beyond what are some other ways that we can do this. One activity I do with teams is I give them some resources and we say, okay, what are the different ways that we can use these things, combine them, use them individually, but really just trying to get people to think outside of the immediate, the obvious. What are other things that we could use these for?
So, for example, I might have a pot that holds my pens and you would empty it out and say, what could you use this for?
Correct.
Samantha has come up with a pretty clever way to teach those skills to businesses who want to help their teams deal with change and uncertainty in a more clear-thinking way. by using a board game.
So the game is based on a zombie apocalypse. and what it does is you work together in teams, but you're forced to make really hard decisions, but you need to keep moving. So we've deliberately incorporated a lot of pressure and a lot of stress. So we artificially induce this really stressful situation. But the reason that we do that is to help people recognize their response. And then what we do is we give them some skills that they can start building and practicing. So some of the things that I've talked about already, so they can actually start practicing the skills while they're going through making these really hard decisions together.
So what do you think is the greatest learning for people who play your zombie game?
One of the fantastic things that I see, just to flip your question, is I start to see as the game goes along that people start understanding the benefits and the opportunities of being able to deal with uncertainty. So as they go through the game, they start to see that actually there are ways that we don't have to follow the rules here. We can do something a little bit different. And when I see players doing things that are a little bit sneaky, but kind of in the rules, I go, that's fantastic. That's what this is all about. It's about finding a way through to get to the end. And if you can do that around the edges, great. Good work.
Now, can you give me an example of a time when you had to manage change and uncertainty in a previous role? So it was a restructure.
Yes, I absolutely can. So the organisation that I worked for, we used to pretty regularly have restructures. And so when they first started happening, it was a very uncomfortable experience, because you don't know what's going to happen and you start thinking about, I'm going to lose my job. What does this mean? Where am I going to end up? If I'm not going to have any control in where I get put, it's not like you're applying for a job. You kind of just get put somewhere, which might not be where you want. And then after there'd been a few restructures, I totally flipped my thinking about, well, what does this mean for me? And so what I started to do for the last two restructures I was at that organization was I started seeing the opportunity that came. And I looked around for what was available. The rules were you were allowed to apply for 3 roles that were in this new structure, and I applied for 8. And then what I did was I went and I met each of those hiring managers and I asked them questions. So I showed my curiosity, I showed my willingness, I showed my interest, asked a bunch of questions, had those interviews, and then I was offered 4 of those 8 roles. So I was offered more roles than I was allowed to apply for. And I then went through a process of going through each of those 4, going, okay, which is the one that I want? So really getting in the driving seat. And I think that's what this is all about. So something can happen to you and you can be taken along for the ride, or you can take a proactive mindset and you can look at the opportunity and you can build your own future.
Well, not everyone has the type of flexibility or financial security to take control, to be in that driver's seat. They feel like they need to hang on because of a mortgage or kids. What would you say to them?
So what I would say to them is definitely look for what's likely for you, but look for what other choices there might be and be curious about what could things look like. And I think that even if you're thinking about your mortgage and you're needing to put your kids through school, by being curious and asking questions and looking for options, that's not going to put a job at risk. In fact, I think by being proactive and asking questions and looking further than where you are now actually makes you look like a more loyal and engaged employee.
And what's the most important piece of advice people can take away from this conversation about how to cope with uncertainty at work?
The most important thing that you can do when you feel uncomfortable with uncertainty at work is to try and slow down your stress response so that you can keep thinking clearly.
Samantha, thank you.
It's a pleasure.
Decision-making expert Samantha Rush. I hope you're feeling better equipped now to handle uncertainty at work and can stop yourself from doing this.
Because we all go to Terminator first, right?
Speaking of Terminators and other kinds of robots, in our next episode, they're attending your work meetings. It's one of the first places artificial intelligence is showing up in our day-to-day work lives. So what is AI doing there? How can it help? And are there any downsides?
People are going to have their own AI very shortly. It's a matter of years, if not less, that can help us be our best selves in these meetings.
This Working Life is on the ABC Listen app. search for the program and tap on the pink heart so you can stay up to date with all of our episodes. And if you have a story about work you want to tell, please send us an email, thisworkinglife@abc.net.au. And a special shout out to This Working Lifers, Sam, Angela, Belinda. Thanks for getting in touch. We hear you. I'm Lisa Leong. Thanks for listening. This program was produced by Michelle Weeks, mixed by Tim James. It was made on the lands of the Wurundjeri people in Melbourne and the Gadigal people in Sydney. Until next time, work it, baby.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.